Oral History 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Fruman are interviewing Seymour Rosen, Side 2, on July 14, 1976.
And playing at that point. And by playing in the freelance business, you're doing everything from Broadway shows to recording sessions to radio programs. And some days are very lean and some days are very plentiful when you do that kind of thing. We earned quite a bit of money in those years.
Was your wife working and dancing?
My wife was teaching. When I had met her, she had been one of Martha Graham's crackers. Mm-hmm. She'd been with the company in 1946, 45, 46, thereabouts. At any rate, she was teaching and I was playing and selling. And I had a problem because the selling became very, very active. I did very, very well. And finally, the owners of the company, I worked for for the Aeolian American Piano Corporation. Aeolian, A-E-O-L-I-A-N, American Piano Corporation, asked me to be a manager of their organ department in New York City. And most of my playing went by the boards as a result of that decision to take that full-time job. And I did this for about 3.5-4 years as the manager and became progressively unhappy with what I was doing because I thought I was getting further and further away from what I liked, which was music. So, in 1959 or 60, I guess it was, I went back to the placement bureau with Juilliard and said, "Hey, what does a guy do who can sell and play the bass?" And they said, "Had you ever heard about orchestra management?" And I said, "That's not for me. Those idiots who sign the check on Sunday, I don't want that job." However, I did get interested enough to try to find out more about it. And I met with a woman named Helen Thompson, who was at those years the executive director of the American Symphony Orchestra League. We met and we spoke, and I subsequently took a week off from work and took an orientation course that the league offered, still does, by the way.
That was the American
Symphony Orchestra League, you know.
And so what did you take, what did you do then? You went in with her?
No, I just met with her, spent a week taking this course. I became fascinated with the possibilities that the field offered, if you want to call it a field. It's not really, it doesn't have a discipline like many other professions, or a literature like many other professions. She kind of took a shine to me, and I to her, and in 1961, I gave up my job and took a position with the Orchestral Society of Westchester as manager. A very small operation with a total budget of about $80,000. It was a terrible orchestra, but a very good one for me because anything that could go wrong went wrong, including half the board members quitting at one point in the season, including the treasurer, so the conductor and I went without food, or at least money, for 3 weeks until the problem was resolved.
You were the managing director.
I was the manager.
This was like a community orchestra in Westchester, New York.
For how long? 61 to what?
61 to 62. 1 year. It was enough. I left and became the manager of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra in Ohio the following year, which is 62, 63. And very shortly after I got to Columbus, I was invited to come and meet with Lucas Foss and the board of directors of the Buffalo Philharmonic. And in 62, I moved to Buffalo. Pardon, 63, I moved to Buffalo as manager of the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. Those were the successful years in Buffalo, those 3 years. And I was asked, after 3 years in Buffalo, to become executive director of the American Symphony Orchestra League, which I did for 1 year. During the course of that year, my predecessor in Pittsburgh, John Edwards, had gotten the call from Chicago and asked me whether I would be interested in Pittsburgh. And I really wasn't.
Who was this?
John Edwards, my predecessor here.
What year was that?
That was 1967. And I told him I wasn't terribly interested, but I would come in and talk with Steinberg, which I did. I met Mr. Steinberg in New York, and then came in to see the board of directors. My impression of Pittsburgh, a city I had only been in once in my life during the war, on a troop train, on my way overseas, was nil. I didn't think I would want to live in Pittsburgh or be any part of it. What did attract me to Pittsburgh was Steinberg. During this period, which was roughly March through June of 1967, I was also offered the directorship of the music program at the National Endowment for the Arts. And so I was trying to decide in my mind, do I want to stay where I am at the League, or do I want to go to the National Endowment, which would mean no physical move, because the League headquarters are in Washington, or near Washington.
You were offered what position again as the for the National?
Director of the Music Program at the National Endowment for the Arts. And finally, one day in late May, I was sitting in my office in Vienna, Virginia, which is a suburb of Washington, and the phone rang, and it was William Steinberg. And he says, "What is this I hear you don't want to come to Pittsburgh?" And I said, "I haven't said I don't want to come to Pittsburgh, Dr. Steinberg. I just haven't made up my mind yet. What is keeping you from Pittsburgh?" And I explained the possibility of working for the National Endowment, and that it could be very helpful to the orchestra field as a whole if an orchestra-oriented person were working there. He said, "Who tells you to take this job?" And I mentioned a few names in the field who were quite interested in my going to the National Endowment. And he said, "You called this particular one, Bill Severns, his name was. You tell him that Steinberg says you should come to Pittsburgh." And we talked for a few minutes longer, and then I went home that evening and talked with my wife, and I said, "Well, if Steinberg wants me, I think I ought to go." And we made the decision then to come to Pittsburgh. I subsequently flew back into town, took care of those mundane details, which include things like how much am I going to be paid and so on. And on July 4th, 1967, I arrived in Pittsburgh without wife or family, because they had commitments in Washington. My wife arrived in September with my son. My daughter finished high school in Washington, or in the suburb that we were living in. And my son went to Peabody High School.
Where'd you live at that? Where'd you find the place?
We lived on Alder Street. And I'm not sure whether that's Shadyside or East Liberty, but it's sort of on the border. It's just off of Highland Avenue. We lived in the Alder Court Apartments for a year and a half. And we now live on Solway Street in Squirrel Hill. And I've been here since then.
And how do you like, what is your impression? How much more time do you have?
About 5 minutes.
All right. What is your impression right now of your life in Pittsburgh, what you found here? Jewish and cultural, musical, everything.
In 5 minutes. I'm going to try to be as honest as I can. I love Pittsburgh, but I don't live in Pittsburgh. I live with my job. And I love my job, and I love this orchestra. I think it's very difficult for people moving into Pittsburgh.
For what reasons?
Well, there is a great surface warmth and acceptance of newcomers, but there is not a real acceptance of newcomers at all.
Are you talking Jewish or culturally?
I'm talking
everybody.
Total. Total. I don't know how to divide one group of people from another. I'm trying to say it right, and it's kind of difficult. Pittsburgh is not a city that really opens itself up. You don't belong to Pittsburgh unless you're born here or have lived here your lifetime. And I think it's one of the problems in the Jewish community, and I think it's one of the problems in Pittsburgh totally. On the surface, there is great warmth and great acceptance. But real warmth and real acceptance, you have to search. That may be true in many cities. I don't know that it's exclusive to Pittsburgh.
Well, do you have any outside interests besides your job and your family?
Well, I'm not really talking for myself alone. I'm talking for my wife as well when I answer that. For me, I don't have the kind of job that gives me time to have outside interests. My average week runs 80 to 90 hours. When I am finished, I collapse. And so I'm very happy because I dig the orchestra and I dig its position in the community and its ability to increase its attractiveness to the community.
Did your wife work teaching here?
My wife is teaching at Chatham College.
From the beginning of the time?
From the very beginning, yeah.
Dancing?
Dance.
And is she satisfied with that? I mean.
For my wife, it's very difficult. To answer your question head on is very difficult. My wife's a hell of a gal.
I know.
And she's given up a lot so that I can be the manager of the Pittsburgh Symphony. Let me explain. We lived in Buffalo for 3 years. She developed a dance program at the University of Buffalo to the point where she was an associate professor on the faculty. Just as that had been established, we moved to Washington. She had nothing in Washington for a year. After about 7 or 8 months there, she was offered a position by American University. In June of that same year, we decided to come to Pittsburgh. She came here at Chatham College, which is a small school, and obviously doesn't offer her the potential that either American University or the University of Buffalo offered her. And so her career is somewhat limited. Add to that the loneliness of my particular kind of job. I do not have friends. I can't have them. And the musicians who I would be obviously most close to regard me as the boss. And so I am not close to them. The board members, once again, I'm the paid help. And so far as the community is served, a lot of people would like to be close to me, but for the wrong reasons. Because they'd like to find out what's really going on in the inside. How much are we really paying Steinberg or Previn? And what are they really like? And so I can't relax with people and sit back. And when I go to a party, you'll notice I have one drink. And after that, I walk around the room with a glass of water and a piece of lemon in it. Now, don't misunderstand. I like liquor. I like to have a drink once in a while. I'm not an alcoholic or anything near that. But I never allow myself the freedom of putting my feet up and just saying anything that comes to my mind. So you tie that kind of job together with a community that is surface accepting but not deeply accepting, and you've got problems. For my wife, it's extremely difficult because not only has she given up a lot, but also she's Mrs. Manager. She happens to be a woman very much in her own right. She's the one you should be interviewing. She's a lot more interesting than I am. But the fact of the matter is that she is Mrs. Manager. And she gets a little sick and tired of saying after a concert, wasn't that a lovely performance, when she might have thought it was terrible. And we sometimes play bad performances. Sometimes the guest artist is not good. And somebody says to you how good it is, and you can't disagree very well, can you? So we have to be somewhat less than open and honest, and that's difficult, particularly for her, because she is an extremely honest woman. I sometimes want to go like that, because she's like, I don't know what's going to come out of her, because she calls it as she sees it.
I know you're pressed for time.
I'm a little.
All right, just one thing more. Give us your opinions of this job in a word.
But wait, before you go into that, may we have another hour of your time another time in case we want to ask you more, please.
Awesome. My opinion of the job?
Is maybe Pittsburgh Symphony job, per se, as compared to the others.
Look, I have to tell you that I think my job really is that of being a social worker, a musical social worker, because basically this orchestra, regardless of how good it is, it only has meaning when audiences use it, when people use it. And so I suppose it's my job to bring together those audiences with this orchestra. And in another sense, to motivate board members, women's association members, to do that which is necessary to both support financially and to bring audience to us. So I consider myself a social worker, in a sense, or of sorts a social worker. I have difficulty understanding why Pittsburgh has an orchestra as good as it is. It's an orchestra far better than the city deserves based on its size, or its or his real interest in it. There has been an attitude in the city of letting Mr. Hines, Mr. Mellon, Mr. So-and-so pay for it, which I find hard to understand, since we do have the kind of support at the box office that we do. I would tell you that I find this to be the most exciting job in my business in the United States because of the potential in it. Somehow or other, in this one area of the arts, real excellence has been created. I have been a small part of it. Most of it happened long before I arrived. Somebody else will make it. Most of it happened before I arrived. Whether it was a Mr. Spector or a Mr. Edwards or a Mr. Reiner or a Mr. Denby or a Mr. whomever on the board, somehow or other, this town has always stood for musical excellence.
Yes, but there was a time when we were sending $10 or $15 to help keep it going, too.
Of course.
You know, I mean, now you can't get a ticket.
But the question of getting a ticket or not getting a ticket is not where the problem is. In terms of support, we have close to 23,000 subscribers this year. The number of people who support, who use the product, is under 4,000. Less than 25% of the people who use the product don't support it. Now, everybody knows that it costs something like three times as much as you pay for your ticket to make that concert happen. Yet, the community at large says, let Mr. Hines pay for it, or let Mr. Mellon pay for it. It's not enough. Now, it was not always so. We still need money. We still need support. How I feel about the orchestra, as I said before, it's a fantastic orchestra, and I can't think of another one I'd rather work with. But I would like to see, for instance, the Jewish community support of the orchestra is at the box office, but not in the contribution title. And I have this documented. And it's depressing, in a way, that certainly if any single segment of the community uses this orchestra, it is the Jewish community. Yet in terms of the 5,000 or 6,000 people who contribute annually, they're not well represented. They're represented, obviously, and they do help, but not in terms of the population of use. How I feel about the orchestra? I told you, I wouldn't want to be with another one because this one offers the challenge. This can be the next great American orchestra. We're not yet, but we can be.
And now with the change of the conductor, do you think this will add some more impetus to their...
I hope so. Nobody can predict what a community does or what he will do. We certainly engaged him because we feel he will bring us the kind of leadership that we want. He is a celebrity. We recognize that. I don't know whether that will mean a great deal in Pittsburgh or whether it will mean a great deal outside of Pittsburgh or a combination of the two. We certainly hope that more can happen now than has happened in the past, and there's been a lot happened in the past. I think the creation of this hall, the creation of the endowment, have been very exciting developments. We are the best financial established orchestra in the United States at this point. That doesn't mean our needs have stopped. I remember our Women's Association once saying, why do you need help selling tickets? You were sold out. You sold out one year. How do you sell out the next year? And how do you sell out the year after that? We have a normal attrition. People move away. People get older and can't come anymore. We have to replace them. And when you're dealing in 20,000 or more subscribers and you have an attrition of 20%, you're looking for 4,000 new people every year. We need help.
Good timing.
I've got to go now.
Okay.